This plain chant melody dates back to the early centuries of Western liturgical music, perhaps the 7th or 8th century. About 800 years later, the same tune was used by composer Josquin des Prez as the basis of a mass. Critic Ted Libby is here for his weekly visit. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Fred.
Josquin, why?
Well, you could call him the Beethoven of the Renaissance, and that would just barely be giving him his due, because he dominated the century in which he lived in a way that even Beethoven did not dominate the 19th century. He was a composer who combined a kind of intellectual rigor with an expressiveness, a freedom and imagination that were breathtaking to those who heard the music. He was a master of polyphony, and he was a musical thinker of the highest order, certainly on a level with Bach and Beethoven and the others that we think of as the greats.
Now, Ted, you've chosen Josquin's Missa Pange Lingua, which is based on that plain chant we heard at the beginning of this segment. Now, that melody would have been about 800 years old at the time, but his audience would have known the melody, and there would have been some real meaning behind that. And this section we're about to hear has that melody woven in.
Yeah, the audience would have known this melody, and they would have recognized its first four notes, da-da-da-da, in the beginnings of most of the sections of the Mass. But Josquin does not sort of slavishly put it out there as what we would call a cantus firmus, that is to say, as a voice that holds the entire plain chant melody through the texture. It's much freer. It's a beautifully freestyle flowing directly from the words, but with these elements of the plain chant, a few notes here and there, permeating the texture so that you always feel close to it. Then, at the end, he does the amazing thing. In the final part of the Agnus Dei, the last part of the Mass, he brings back the whole plain chant in long notes, in the highest voice. It's as if he's saying, well, it's been there all along, but now here it is. I'm showing it to you. And what happens is that the Agnus Dei is transformed from something somber at the beginning to something that can only be described as rapturous when this plain chant melody comes back in its glory at the end. The voices just flower from that point on to the end of the piece.
Such a rich texture for only four parts. Each of the parts is doubled, so there are eight voices altogether singing those four parts. Now, this is a man born 235 years before Bach,
yeah,
before the Baroque. But can we hear the foundations being laid here for the rest of Western classical music?
Absolutely. It passed from Josquin on to another generation. The Italians picked up this style, and from the combination of Italian and Flemish sources, Bach absorbed this contrapuntal art. It's very much the seedbed for what we find in the Baroque, and it's still with us today.
Well, Ted, let's hear, as we build to the summit of this piece, the final two sections, the Sanctus and Benedictus together, and then the Agnus Dei. What should we listen for in this?
Well, we should listen for those passages in which Josquin momentarily drops down from the four-voice texture that we've remarked on that's so wonderfully rich to a two-voice texture, which is imitative in nature, in fact, rather strictly imitative, and equally beautiful. He does that in the Benedictus, and again in the middle of the Agnus Dei, providing a certain amount of contrast and also a sense, again, of the orderliness behind the conception. Against that, the passages that are in freestyle seem all the more magnificent to my ear. So that's what we should listen for.